You know, it almost brings me to tears whenever one of the politicians asks me, do you think it'll take a death before things will change? I just cannot for the life of me understand where that sort of thinking comes from, truly.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I'm also the host of this show. This week, I wanted to focus on the plight of asylum seekers in offshore detention on Nauru. People who follow politics closely will know that there is a head of steam building around this issue, that there is a desire on the part of many in the community that we get a breakthrough for a number of children that are currently in offshore immigration detention, suffering severe physical and mental ailments. I wanted to talk this week to Paul Bowert, who is a Darwin-based paediatrician and who is active in the Australian Medical Association. And Paul has, for the last few weeks, been very active around the corridors in Canberra. A bit unusual for a paediatrician to be having his rounds in the parliamentary precinct, but nonetheless, he has been working the offices in this building in an effort to focus the minds of politicians from all sides, from across the divide, from crossbenchers to Labor MPs to government MPs, to try and bring to them the cases that he has been consulting on. These cases relate to medical transfers of detainees to Australia in order to have their medical conditions better treated. Anyway, it's a tough conversation coming up. I won't pretend to you that this is easy listening, but it's important listening. And here we go. Paul, thank you very much for coming on Australian Politics Live.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's great. I want to start with who you are in terms of introducing you to the listeners. What's your background and why you have become very active on this issue of children in offshore immigration detention?
Sure. So I'm a paediatrician. I went to the Northern Territory for a year in 1977, so still there. Mm-hmm. I represent Australia's paediatricians on the Australian Medical Association Federal Council. I first became involved with refugees and asylum seekers when there was onshore detention and onshore processing, and a lot of that was done in the Northern Territory at Wickham Point, so that I saw quite a few families from the detention centre in those days, visited the detention centre to see the children. I guess what struck me from the outset was I'm used to working with disadvantaged children, and that's been my life, and mainly in the Northern Territory and remote communities, which I still do. But what struck me about these children that I was seeing was that there seemed to be a deliberate attempt to dehumanise them. So these kids were showing up at outpatients, not with names, but with a boat number. Mm-hmm. They would have a brown envelope with a boat number, and that's how they presented. If there were two parents and a three-year-old child, they'd be accompanied by three Serco guards, one for the three-year-old and one for each parent. While the examination was going on, these guards stood outside the door. That to me was fairly abhorrent. I really did worry about what sort of treatment these people were getting back in the detention centre if this was the public face of what was going on. Later, when they moved processing offshore, I'd still be involved with an occasional review of the clinical notes, probably a couple of times a year, mm-hmm. And would make suggestions to those seeking a second opinion. They'd be often be asylum seeker reference people, resource people,
yeah.
I'd be asked to do a review of the medical report for pro bono lawyers who mm-hmm. were trying to hurry up, expedite the children being given satisfactory treatment. So that was only a couple of years, but over the last few months there's been a large escalation in the numbers. So probably now about 14 children over the last few weeks I've been asked to review their notes.
Mm-hmm. And what's going on with these kids? For people who haven't been following this issue closely, what's going on with them?
Well, the main problem are the older children, 8, 9, 10-year-olds and adolescents. A lot of those are developing what we call the resignation syndrome. They are feeling hopeless they have decided that death is a better option than what they're feeling at the moment. I mean, quite a lot of these children, have become particularly suicidal since they were shut off from the possibility of going to the United States by Trump's refusal to take people from different countries, particularly Iran. So several of the children I've had to deal with have been Iranian and feeling helpless and hopeless. The most recent were just this last weekend. So I was asked by the group at Westmead if I'd mind reviewing the notes of two children, a 12-year-old girl and her 14-and-a-half-year-old brother. And I've been talking about these children to the politicians the last few weeks I've been here because I think it highlights what's going on and the severity of their illness. So the 12-year-old girl is a bright girl. I note from her medical file that before they left their country, that she was in a school for gifted children. She has become increasingly depressed over the last couple of months. She was seen by a psychiatrist probably 6 weeks ago who suggested that this child should be removed from Nauru because she's at serious risk of suicide, and that if she were not removed that there would be consequences. She hasn't been removed for reasons that I don't fully understand. The psychiatrist's request was ignored. And so it was a few weeks later, 2 or 3 weeks later, that I was asked at this last weekend, I was asked to review the notes. She hadn't eaten any solids for over 3 weeks, no clear fluids for over 3 weeks. Her father was struggling several hours a day to get 100 mils of sustagen into her. She'd become bedbound. A previously bright girl, the parents had trouble understanding her. The only time they could really understand her, she was saying that she wanted to die and she wanted to kill herself. She was passing a small amount of urine in the bed once a day. She was carried to the toilet every fourth or fifth day by her father for a bowel action. Couldn't shower, had to be bathed by the father. Her brother, he was 14 and a half, probably more severely affected. He had not eaten for a longer period, had become extremely aggressive several weeks ago, but for the last few weeks been completely confined to bed. A similar situation in terms of the amount of fluid that was being administered. I also had access to see his blood results, which suggested that he was in early stages of organ failure with his liver function tests being aberrant and renal function tests also. Dad took me into their room on his mobile phone and I asked if he could help me with the examination of these children. Both of them were signs of obvious recent weight loss. Both were looking dehydrated, very cold peripheries, according to Dad. Both of them completely non-communicative. So I wrote my report and told Dad that we'd do whatever we could. And I had hoped that they would be... would have been out of there by now, but I understand that my report is being taken by the pro bono lawyers to the federal court today, in the hope that we can get these children off as a matter of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
I am quite concerned that one or both of them will die if this process goes on for too long. So that's an example of my most recent cases, but there have been other cases of children a lot younger, and the ability of the treating doctors has been limited for particularly infants. So I had about a month ago had a 7-week-old child who developed a swollen wrist. Dad showed me photos of this on his phone, and I thought the child had infection of the bone, osteomyelitis, or a bone tumour,
mm-hmm.
Both of which were nasty, of course, and needed sorting out in a tertiary centre. The baby had been taken to the local clinic. They were unable to draw blood to check whether there were signs of infection in the blood test. They were unable to put in a drip to give the baby antibiotics. So I said, look, this is the differential diagnosis. The child needs to be in a tertiary centre. We need at least an MRI or a CAT scan to see what's going on. We need intravenous lines. We need antibiotics instantly, you know, urgently. It took 7 days for my report to be eventually make its way to the federal court, and once again there seemed to be obstruction all the way along, probably by border force rather than the Nauruan government. But every step seemed to, you know, be an obstacle.
And why do you think that is? Because obviously we're two human beings in a little pod recording studio, and I'm finding it very, very hard to listen to these stories. Why do you think there is obstruction?
I don't think they appreciate how unwell the children are, honestly. They don't have the experience to know how unwell those children are. They don't have the experience to work out what the differential diagnosis for this child with a swollen wrist is. They certainly didn't have the expertise to draw blood, to do blood tests and blood cultures. They didn't have the expertise to put in a drip. So I think it's lack of knowledge and ignorance rather than being deliberately nasty. That's the only compassionate reason I can give them for doing that.
And what sort of, just for people who don't understand how things work on Nauru, what sort of medical infrastructure is there in order to look after the well-being of asylum seekers? I just note the Prime Minister over the last couple of days in the Parliament has emphasised that there are, you know, X number of medical professionals, X number of mental health professionals. What's it like really?
I have trouble sorting that out through reading the clinic notes. I know that the children are either seen at a local clinic or at the local hospital, and I have difficulty sorting out from the notes where they've been seen and who's seen them. I am concerned that I don't seem to see any real constancy of signatures in terms of follow-up, patient care and patient follow-up. There seems to be different people a lot mm-hmm. of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the reports I get from the parents and the requests they are making to refugee help groups is that they don't trust the medical workforce there. They feel that they're being pushed to one side a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this child with the turned out to be osteomyelitis when they finally got him to the hospital at in Sydney. It turned out to be osteomyelitis. The problem was this could have become a septicemia at any stage, and it still took 7 days to get the child off. And I kept ringing each day to make sure the child wasn't deteriorating.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Another child, for instance, 11-year-old, once again, hadn't eaten for ages, in a very poor state, like the brother and sister I was just talking about. But on this occasion, the treating doctors had done an electrocardiograph on the child and had, in fact, identified that the child had what we call prolonged QT syndrome. In other words, the The child's electrolytes were so aberrant and altered by the lack of food and fluid that it was impacting on the conducting system of the heart, and that child was at risk of having a cardiac arrhythmia or cardiac arrest at any stage. And once again, it took, you know, 7 days to get it to the courts. And once again, each day I was ringing to make sure the child was still with us. Should I say that of all the children that I've done reports on and other paediatricians have done reports on, so there have been some 40 children over the last few months where the reports have made their way to the federal court, all of them have been removed straight away. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, the judge won't even look at the Border Patrol notes, any other notes apart from our notes, mm-hmm. And say, this child needs to be out of there urgently. Every single one of them.
Well, I suppose we could say thank God for that.
Yeah. So with the current machinations going on, particularly today with, I think politicians finally understanding that what all the doctors who have anything to do with these children are saying is right, that they are critically ill, there is risk of death. I think the message is finally getting through to the politicians that we are really dealing with a risky situation. We do risk losing a child unless all of them are removed rapidly.
And so let's talk about that, because you were around during the last parliamentary sitting fortnight seeing politicians trying to raise awareness about these particular cases and to put them in front of them. And then you've been around all of this week as well, obviously continuing that exercise. So where do you think politicians are up to in their heads about all of this?
I do think, first of all, I've been given a good hearing. Mm-hmm. So I've been grateful for that. I'm here with with the group Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, other refugee groups. So we have been given a good hearing, and there's been, I think, genuine surprise at the level of illness, mm-hmm. and I think that's had a bit to do with movement going on at the moment. I think the fact that Prime Minister Morrison ignored Dr. Tony Bartone's letter to him a few weeks ago saying, look, this is really awful, and laid it out honestly for him, and to have that, completely rejected. I don't think Dr. Bartone got a report. Incensed a lot of the medical profession. Mm. We have been calling for politicians to realise the urgency of the situation for years, actually.
Yeah.
And I think, for instance, Dr. Sarah Townend, off her own bat, a GP in Sydney, just started using social media saying that enough is enough. We're hearing about these terrible cases. Let's send a letter to Prime Minister Morrison. Mm. So within 2 weeks, she had, close to 6,000 signatures, including from virtually every college in the country and the AMA, as well as individuals, multiple professors, and everybody who's anybody in the medical profession put in their signature. So I think that's been there. And there's been a lot of publicity about that. Mm. And I think what we've seen today is a bit of a scurry from different groups to try to come up with something that maintains their political face, as well as showing some genuine concern for the children.
And why do you think what's activated? I accept your point that the medical profession has been consistent on this stuff. Has had a when Brian Owler was the president of the AMA, the AMA had quite a forward-leading posture. Under the next president, who, forgive me, whose name I've temporarily forgotten. Anyway, we won't mention. All right. Yes, we won't linger there.
But, I think we lost a couple of years. I think, honestly, I think we lost a couple of years, and I won't mention names, but Brian Aller was very strong on this. He realised, the problems. People like Professor Liz Elliott had been seeing these children for many years and had recognised resignation syndrome in these kids. To be quite honest, what's happening now should have happened 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But I am pleased that it's happening now. I don't know enough about the machinations of all of this to know where it's going to end up, but I do know that all the doctor groups in the country are all unanimous on the fact that all the kids need to come off. They all need to come off urgently, and they all need to come off with their parents, and they need to come to Australia or have the equivalent care that you would receive in Australia. There's around 80 children left. 30 of those are on a critical list waiting for assessment, and the rest will all be damaged to a different degree. You know, some of them have been there all their lives, or some of them have been there 5 years. And the major concern for all of them is that they will be damaged, and they need to be assessed and managed as a matter of urgency so that this damage doesn't become permanent.
Mm. Do you think that part of the reason why this has been a bit of a slow boil, although I think there has been, you know, if we look at published opinion polls in recent times, for example, there does seem to be a bit of a shift on in the part of public consciousness. But do you think part of the problem with this is that it's out of sight?
Oh, absolutely. And I really do. And I think that's been, deliberate, of course. The thing that incenses me most about the fact that, these people have been dehumanised from childhood, the fact that we haven't been able to get access to an independent group looking at what's going on there, and the first attempt by the AMA was back in 2004.
Yeah.
And the other thing that really depresses me is that it's a policy now which seeks to deliberately harm children, and to me, I can't for the life of me work out why we need it.
What about? I don't want to cut your point off. But what is often invoked when that question is asked in different forms to politicians is that we need the deterrence regime in order to dissuade people from jumping on boats and drowning at sea. So yes, it's tough. Yes, it's horrible. But the means justify the ends because we've stopped the boats. What do you think about that? As just a piece of logic or a rationale for a policy choice that Australia has made. What do you think about that?
I honestly think it's terrible. I think it's terrible for the people on the island, and I think it's terrible for Australia as a nation that we're doing that. There are better minds than mine that say that it's unnecessary. I caught the end of Professor Triggs's talk the other night where she said that both Morrison and somebody else from the other side had said that, this particular policy is doing nothing to stop the boats. You know, they're turning the boats around to achieve what they wanted to achieve, and there was no need for this to continue. Mm. So the way I see it and the way it galls me as a paediatrician is that what it's doing is causing harm unnecessarily, and sometimes I wonder about the individuals involved, whether it's being done deliberately.
Mm. And do you think that the Wentworth by-election, I know you're much more focused on trying to sort of convince the political class that we've got a problem that needs fixing than the machinations of policy, which I'm sure bore you shitless, not to put too fine a point on it. But there seems to be, obviously there's been a lot of coordination on the part of refugee advocates around the Wentworth by-election in Sydney because it represents a moment where a socially progressive constituency in Australia who would have residual concerns about this policy are about to go to the polls. Mm. Do you think that Wentworth offers an opportunity to get some sort of a breakthrough here?
Yeah, I have been looking at it from the margins, and Karen, previous AMA president, she actually gave me the President's Award back in 2002.
Oh, so did
I don't see much of her, but I think very highly of her. I think, you know, she's already come out and been extremely strong about doing something as soon as she gets in, if she gets in. You know, unfortunately, the Liberal and the Labor are hampered by their political mindsets at the moment, which are changing. And today have changed, I think, dramatically for both sides. But I think really what should happen over the next day or two, I honestly don't care, you know,
who's up and who's down,
as long as there can be a bipartisan agreement that you know, these kids are sick and they really do need to get off Nauru urgently with their parents and preferably to Australia.
And you've said, well, you've referenced a couple of times in this conversation that you are concerned that one of these kids are going to die.
Yeah, you know, it almost brings me to tears whenever one of the politicians asks me that, or one of the politicians' minders asks me, do you think it'll take a death before things will change? I just cannot for the life of me understand where that sort of thinking comes from, truly.
Well, it's chilling if people actually said that to you, that it will take a death.
Do you think it'll take a death?
God, it's just unfathomable. Anyway, I think all we can do is keep having conversations like this and hoping for the best and hoping to assist these people in any way that we can as a community and as a country, I think. It's the only thing we can do, right?
It is, and I am cautiously optimistic that things will change. There was a big rally in front of Parliament House today by the Remote Australians for Refugees. And gradually people are learning that there's terrible stuff going on. It's our fault and we should be stopping it.
Perfect note to end on. Paul Bauert, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. You're most welcome.
Well, thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. Thank you, as always, to my production team in Sydney, to Miles, and to Hannah. You rock, as always. Don't forget, if you do like the listening and you support the show, to subscribe, tell your friends, share word about the project. It really does help. Parliament will be back. Of course, we have a 2-week sitting, so I'll be back with another episode next week.